Coffee Conversations about Influencer Marketing is brought to you by Influential, a strategic consultancy that takes the guesswork out of influencer marketing for your brand. We provide much-needed strategically crafted frameworks on how to implement influencer campaigns specific to your brand needs.
Hi there. Thank you for tuning in to Coffee Conversations about Influencer Marketing. I am Anne, your host, and today we will be discussing employee influencing. We used to refer to this as employee advocacy, and it's on the rise in South Africa as it is in the rest of the world. But what does it mean? In a nutshell, it means that brands use their employees as brand experts to elevate or amplify the brand's messaging or the brand itself, but at the same time, it also positions its employees as experts in the field, which is a win-win situation for everyone. But what does it actually entail and how does it work? Well, today we have Ayanda Saboni, who is Group Executive for Brand Marketing and Communications at PPS, to tell us all about what it is and their experiences with employee influencing program. So without any further delay, here is today's episode. Thank you so much for joining us today, Ayanda. Really, really appreciate it. But let's start by asking you just to tell our listeners more about who you are, what PPS really is, and what is your role at the company?
Hi, and thank you so much for having me. I'm Ayanda Saboni. I head up the marketing, brand, and communications for PPS. PPS is a diversified financial services provider. So we have businesses in insurance, financial advisory, medical aid, administration, as well as short-term and long-term insurance. So we fill the entire spectrum. But what makes us different is that we operate under the ethos of mutuality. That means if you become a member of PPS, you get a piece of the business. So we have members who have been with us for many years and have been able to share in the profits of the business because of our ethos of mutuality. And the selection that we use is that you have to be a professional. So the professions used to be quite limited in the past, but over the years we've opened it up. And a general description of what it takes to qualify for PPS is that you need to have a postgraduate university degree for you to be part of the society. So PPS stands for Professional Provident Society. So we are a society in the general term.
Okay. And what's your role at PPS, Ayanda?
I head up marketing and communications as well as looking after the brand.
Okay, so that's also quite a hard one, especially if it's more a non-traditional channel as well.
Yeah, we're an intermediated business. So our channel landscape is quite interesting because we obviously have our intermediaries, some of which are independent,
yes,
and some are employed by PPS, and they are basically our route to market. So because our products are generally structured, if you look at someone's financial needs, especially professionals' financial needs, you know, people have to structure things differently. So you have to look at what they need and put a plan for them and then execute on that plan. So we would use independent advisors as well as some advisors that we hire that work for PPS.
Okay. So today we're obviously talking about employee influencing. But how did you become aware of this channel of influence?
So I'm not sure if I'm allowed to confess, but I'll make a confession anyway. So I must be honest, I was one of those that was anti-influencers as a position. I really was not keen on the idea of influencers because I always feel like you are taking your brand and you're almost gambling on a person. And when their fortunes are up, you benefit. But when their fortunes are down, you suffer as a result. So the idea of having influencers didn't quite appeal to me, but it was a social conversation with someone who mentioned, you know, that there's this business that does this, and they sort of piqued my interest. But okay, I must be honest, I was not quite sold until I met with Kevin and he explained to me what it is that they do. And in that engagement, he managed to get me at least to be interested enough to pilot it.
I can say, very safe to say, you obviously didn't investigate any other kind of B2C influencer marketing as well as the employee influencing part of it.
No.
It's quite interesting that you're saying you were quite against influencers as a concept in general. I think a lot of people still feel that way, especially marketers, just because of you've either been burnt or seen other businesses not really performing well with using influencers. So yeah, it's quite interesting. And I love kind of our podcast because we're educating on that. And yes, obviously there are companies out there who does it and they don't get any results, but we're hoping to help people do it the right way and see the benefits.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, there are different industries. And if you look at FMCG, mm-hmm. The influencer strategy, you know, makes sense. That's a place where you can do it. But when it comes to financial services, I think it starts becoming a little bit more tricky. And perhaps that's where my original positioning was. And even with the employee influencer, I was a bit nervous, but yeah, my attitude towards it has changed completely.
I think it's very important what you're saying. It's the different industries need different kind of influencers and different strategies. Because in insurance and in financial services, your everyday kind of influencer marketing will obviously not yield the results that you would like.
Yes.
Why do you think employee influencing is a good fit for PPS?
So there were two things that we benefited with this. One is the employee engagement. You know, when you put it upon someone to say, listen, we would like you to do this thing, you're doing it for yourself, but you're also doing it for the benefit of the company. It sort of makes people feel valued. The training that they got and the education that they got in preparation for this made them feel a lot valued. Secondly, we found that when you use, I mentioned earlier that we've got advisors that are employed by PPS. When you use people that are like advisors that are employed by PPS who sell products, it empowers them to be able to speak and reach out in a different way, not the traditional I'm a salesman. Mm-hmm. Trying to talk to you, but giving before they get, you know, before you get that sale, you give people information, you give people entertainment, they get to relate to you and they get to know you a little bit better. So that was the one thing that I found was beneficial. Those were the things I found that were beneficial for us.
Oh, that's amazing. And it is so true. When you involve your employees and they really love what they do, it just empowers them and empowers you. And it gets your brand out there in such an authentic way, which is fantastic.
Yes.
What was your initial objectives when you started with your employee influencing program?
So it was really to amplify our voice. So our strategy had been to grow our following on channels such as LinkedIn and Facebook, particularly LinkedIn, because we found that a lot of the professionals go to LinkedIn and they engage differently with the content in there. They take it a little bit more serious. And when you try and you're trying to boost things, you sometimes don't get the same level of reach. But when you have employees that are influencers, there is that it's almost like a pyramid. Because you one person amplifies your message and makes you reach other audiences that you wouldn't have ordinarily reached. So if we put an article or we put a post on LinkedIn on our company page, only the people that follow our company page would reach it. But the moment three or four of our employees rebroadcast that post, suddenly we are getting exponential growth because, yes, there might be an overlap between the people that follow our page and people that follow them, but we get into new audiences. And those new audiences also, if it's valuable for them, will share it with other people. So it just created this virtuous circle of benefit for the company as well as for the employee. and their influence with their social circles. And the more they produced relevant content, the more they attracted engaged followers and attracted new followers. So it's a win all round.
I think also it just kind of plays into the thing we always say about influencer marketing around across the board, is that it comes from real people who has real experiences, and it speaks about from their point of expertise. And I think even more so in employee influencing, that is true. And that's where you get that great engagement and people start recognizing the expertise, not only of the person, but also associate that with where they work.
Absolutely agree.
So do you think your influencer or your employee influencing campaigns is better to be once-offs, or do you think kind of an always-on approach would be more effective for brands?
So for us, the always-on approach is better because you have a level of consistency. Also, once something works, you know, if it's benefiting the employee, you can't say to the employee, well, now stop posting. It is their platform anyway.
That's true.
So by default, it becomes an always on type of approach for those that are interested and are engaged with it, because there's absolute benefit for them as well as obviously for the company. So I think it's one of those things that grows organically.
Yeah, and I think LinkedIn is also great for that, just to kind of get that level of expertise going and for your company just to kind of get that amplification that it needs.
Absolutely, and LinkedIn is quite a pricey platform on a good day. So
yes.
So having the employee influencer almost circumvents some of the costs, because you're still getting reach, but this time you're not necessarily paying as much as you would. So they definitely a financial benefit from you know, saving a bit from the marketing budget.
Oh, we all love saving money, especially these days.
Marketing budgets are always just that easy for CFOs to want to slash.
Oh, you know, it's always the first thing that goes. Like, we have to save costs. What about the PR, comms, and marketing budgets? Yes, let's do that.
Yeah, but I think it's all in the narrative, right? Because if we say we're saving costs, marketing is not a cost. Marketing is an investment. It's an investment
into the future
growth of your business. So if you say, well, we're going to cut costs, let's cut marketing, you're essentially saying we're cutting costs, let's cut all future investments in our growth.
I love that way of thinking of it. I'm going to remember that.
Indeed.
I know one of the things that make this type of program so super successful is obviously choosing the right employees to participate. You're not going to ask every single employee to participate in this kind of program unless they're obviously really invested in it and they buy into the program and the company they work for. So what do you look for, and what did you look for and other brands should look for in their employees when they choose them to participate in this?
Okay, so for us, one was people that were engaged in the company. So when you look at the ordinary company, there are those people that are just engaged. They're positive. You know, they're not the toxic types. You know, you find some people that are good performers, but what comes out of their mouths about the company is never is never positive. So we look for people that have got that are positive about themselves, that are positive about the company, and that also perform well, right? And then we look at people that already have got an inclination towards social media. So we did have one or two that didn't. And for them, they just, I mean, one or two people just said, listen, this just is not going to work for me. And that was when we looked at people's position. We thought what they have to share is quite relevant. But if someone is not a social media head, you know, this is not the way to introduce them to social media. They find it quite daunting. So it's people that already like social media. There is a bit of an age bias, but there are people like myself who is, you know, I'm not as young as I would like to believe I am. But
all of us, absolutely.
But I do spend quite a fair amount of time on social media, and I've enjoyed social media. I always say to my kids that I was on SA Reunited, which happened.
Oh my goodness!
On Facebook. Very active on SA Reunited, and it's a pity what happened to that particular platform, because I think they were the Facebook before Facebook was a thing.
They probably were. You're right.
Yeah, no, they definitely Facebook killed them. But I think the concept was very much the same. So so we looked at people that have an interest already in social media, and we looked at people mm-hmm. that from a work perspective are positive, people who take themselves seriously and take their own personal brands mm-hmm. seriously, not people who are volatile, because someone who's volatile one day is going to be great, and the day that they don't like the company anymore, they, you know, changing their tune. So looking at maturity, yeah. it's quite a subjective test, but it's a combination of things. But one is someone who lives the company's values, someone who has got a good performance track record, someone who is positive themselves, and someone who already has got the social media as something they're interested in.
I think that's a great little tick list to have handy. Because like you say, you want people who are really, really positive about themselves and the company. Otherwise, you might do more harm than good.
Indeed.
Do you recommend other businesses wanting to do this employer influencing to implement the program, or do you recommend that they just do it themselves?
Sure. I think if they did it themselves, they would have to have a very high risk appetite. it helps. Anything worth knowing is worth learning from someone that knows it a little bit better than you. There are certain
100% agree with that
from the experts. And I mean, you can say, well, how can they really be experts? This is such a new field. Yes, it's new, but there are people who've immersed themselves in this topic, and have tried it already. So why on earth would I want to learn the mistakes that they've already gone through? So, and I
thought,
it's not that expensive to get people to come and help. And it also counts as training. Mm-hmm. So from a CETA perspective, you know, those hours that people are training and that spend, if it is a corporate, it's definitely worth while, you know, having some people come and train you, because then you've got a bit of a structure, and the company that trained us gave us a bit of hand holding. So it wasn't just a classroom thing. There was a bit of coaching, coaching afterwards, a bit of encouragement, a bit of competition to say, okay, so this person is the one that managed to grow the most number of followers. This was the most impactful post, etc. And that created a bit of a community. That community then started being able to stand on its own. And what I liked about what they did is that they didn't make us addicted to their support, if you know what I mean.
They
helped us to say, okay, our relationship is going to start here and it will end here. Because a lot of times people start off saying, listen, we'll give you training and support, and then they want you to be dependent forever. And their approach was, we are going to empower you, and then at some point we're going to let go and you're going to go on your own, and good luck. And I love that, because it just, you know, it felt like, okay, I've got this amount of time. I need to learn what I need to learn in this amount of time. I'm going to have support for this long, and then I've got to go on my own, which was great. Beware of people that want you to be dependent forever. You know,
if
they want to run,
I agree with that. Absolutely, because then you're like, but at some point I'm gonna grasp this and I'm gonna be empowered to do this myself, and then why can't I just run with it? I agree with that, and I do love that they give you kind of a beginning and an end, because like you say, you know you're gonna have to hustle and kind of figure this thing out, and then you're so empowered that you can carry on by yourself, which is great.
Most of you know that Influential is our podcast sponsor. But did you know that my co-host Anne heads up the agency? And that is the first ever boutique agency in South Africa that specializes in developing strategy for influencer marketing. Anne and her team are experts in the field, and they've spent years honing their skills and knowledge about influencer marketing and at some of the country's biggest PR and media agencies. The moment that you think you might want an influencer campaign, make sure to call or email them first, because without strategy, you might not have the outcomes that you would like and are looking for. In addition to talking all things influence on this podcast, and also put together the fantastic influential newsletter that comes out every month. And this is another way for you to keep up to date with the industry. The link to latest newsletter is in the show notes. Check it out. And if you like, please subscribe. And contact details are also on there. Let's keep the conversation flowing.
What do you think? I think we actually spoke about this, but is there any other benefits having an agency on board to help you in the beginning bits, at least, to hold your hand?
Yeah, look, I think, yeah, as I've mentioned, it helps to have people who already understand. And there were like little tips that, you know, we wouldn't have otherwise known, like how many hashtags to attach. You know, the thing in our minds would be as many hashtags as possible, whereas you know, they'll tell you tips to say, yeah, there's diminishing returns after some time. The algorithm will figure out if you're just hashtagging everything and tagging everyone.
Yeah.
Tips like that, tips like what kind of post should be a big headline and an image, which should be an article, where should you place an article? How can you measure your own success in terms of the post and so on? So there were like little insider information tips that were given that made it worthwhile, you know. So if I said to myself, well, I could have done this by myself, yes, but there's a lot of information that would have probably taken me months to figure out, and some of it never figure out ever, if I didn't go through this process.
That's the great thing of experts, right? Like, you're not sitting and pulling your hair out for 4 months trying to figure something out. They could have taught you in like 2 hours, which I absolutely love.
Yep.
So I remember about a year and a half ago, I really started taking LinkedIn seriously. And I was just like, it's LinkedIn. You put your things on there. It's like a CV, right? I think most people think that. And then all of a sudden, these people started teaching me and they're like, no, you do these articles and you do this and insights into your industry and you position yourself as an expert and it helps your company and helps you. And the hashtag thing, I was also very flabbergasted. I'm like, but on every other platform, you just hoy in like 15 hashtags and hope for the best. And here, they're telling me at LinkedIn, like, if you do more than 3, you're going to get penalized. And you're like, wow, okay. So what I love about the platform, it's so strategic that you really need to make sure you have the right connections, that speaking into the right audience, and then you must be very careful of the hashtags you use. It's just like, it's like a bit of a science to it.
Yep, it is. It is. Yeah. And if you do it right, the benefits are there.
Absolutely. And I think it's for everyone. It's not just for the brand. It's also for the employee. And it stands them in good stead later on in life as well.
Yep, fully agree.
They absolutely obviously provide training and hand-holding. And how long do they hold your hand for? What is the time period?
Well, it depends. I'm not sure, you know, because we only did with one company, but it's, I would think about 3 months, if I recall correctly. We're about to do another intake now, actually, of employee influencers. We're in the planning phases. So in the next 2 weeks or so, we'll be starting. I think it's about a 3 month timeline.
Okay. So that's actually plenty of time for you to kind of get really comfortable with the whole process.
Yes.
What metrics do you measure with employee influencing? So what does success look like in this type of campaign?
So success for the company or success for the employee? I think the employee can determine for themselves what it is that they're looking for.
Yeah.
But we found that people did about the number of followers that they gained. You know, they started becoming selective as well in terms of the kind of people that they allowed them to, that they allowed to follow them. But
amazing.
For the company, for us, the biggest benefit was really just the amplification of our message. So the biggest metric is how many of the messages that are posted on the group site or the group page, are either rebroadcast as is or tailored for an audience. So obviously we love it when employees take the message that was on the group post and put their own perspective to it and share it. And then how many more people share that message? Because the moment they take it and they personalize, it means there's resonance, and it means that it stops being a company message and it starts becoming that person's message to their base.
Yeah, and that is absolutely so powerful because it's that personal stamp of kind of expertise on it.
Yes.
Do you think there's any potential dangers running this kind of program without any proper guidance or any experts helping you?
So without experts, I think it's a bad idea. It's not even, you know, these are the specific dangers. But in terms of generally, I think there is always a risk. Regardless of whether you're getting supported or not, there's always a risk that an employee can go rogue. An employee can decide, you know, like they're really unhappy about something and use that platform. But the control with that is that if you choose people that are of a, you know, they're mature, even if they are unhappy about something, they'll think about the long-term consequences of that. Because when you start going wild on social media, it says something about you as well. If you 100%. Are a leader in a business, and suddenly, you know, you're unhappy about something and then you go on social media, it just tells the other people, especially because LinkedIn is such a career orientated platform. You know, so I think there's always a risk. But I think the benefits and the rewards far outweigh that risk.
Sure. And I think, like you say, when you choose the employees carefully and you also kind of guide them in what to post, it's a bit less risk, even though there's always that risk that someone's going to go rogue. But also, I don't think on LinkedIn people are too prone to do that, because your future employers will always kind of go back and look on all your social media, how you treated previous employers as well. And I think that's just become part of the interview process in 2020.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, even if you don't look at employees, if you look at someone who is a supplier, so you might be in this as an employee, but at a later stage, you start your own business. You know, when people are dealing with others, they will look at how their behavior is. So I don't think it's always just about how you're going to be viewed as an employee. It's about how you're going to be viewed as a business person, whether you are in the business for yourself or you are in the business being employed by someone else. But your ethics in business and your behavior when the chips are down will determine how, you know, others will view you.
That is so true. And I think we should bookmark that, because that is invaluable advice for anyone, to be honest. I'm assuming, because you're doing your second intake already of the employee influencing program on your side, and I'm hoping that you will probably carry on doing that. Do you think you will at some point know enough to internalize this function, or would you always kind of bring in an expert to help you?
As things stand now, I think I would definitely continue with the expert, because things move. Things are not static. You know, we're not staying in a world where things are constantly the same. So as much as I bet whatever we did last year with the first program, there's going to be some new information with this new intake.
Yeah.
So it always is best. I mean, if you're going to use experts, you just get the cutting edge of, you know, what's happening in that industry. So I'm prone to using them. The only time that I wouldn't is when the price starts getting like too high, that it's unaffordable. then we might as well, you know, not be at the top, but get the basics. But while the mix between affordability and the benefits is right, then it's worthwhile.
No, I hear what you're saying, and I think also, because it's digital, things does move extremely fast, like you say. What's in last year, maybe 2 months ago, something, the algorithm might have changed, the rules might have changed, and just if you're not in the industry, you don't know about that. Mm. Yeah. Mm. Why do you think it's not more popular in South Africa, employer influencing? And why doesn't everyone have one?
So I don't think that it's not more popular. I just think it's unknown.
Okay.
Because when you say popular, it means people are exposed to it and they make a decision whether they're interested or not. I think this is something that's a bit new. And also it's that the way our organizations are structured, particularly corporates, HR is one stream and marketing is another. And sometimes these two are running parallel. They never really interact unless there's a problem. So in the normal operations of the business, you only bring HR in if you want recruitment, discipline, policies, you know, that kind of thing as a marketing person. But we are fortunate in that PPS is a bit of a mid-corp. So we are smaller and much more intertwined. So to get the HR, parties to the table to say, listen, there's this great idea and we think this is how it can work, was not that difficult. But I think in other organizations, you might find that because HR and marketing are far apart, it might take that much more effort to bring the two, to make people realize that employees themselves can be part of the arsenal of marketing.
We're almost at the end of our conversation. Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts on employee influencing, and we can't wait to hear how your second intake is going to be. Before we go, can you maybe give our listeners two or three insights or tips if they want to embark on employee influencers? What should they be considering before they do this?
Okay, so the first would be clear about what you're trying to do. What doesn't work is trying to make your employees robots, you know, force feeding the things that they need to say. You need to give people the freedom to own their own pages and do on their own pages whatever it is that they feel is right. But you as the company need to provide such compelling content that the employee wants to do it. So this should not be a carrot and stick type of approach. It should be two parties mutually agreeing that this is a good thing for both. And if one doesn't feel like it's working for them, they should be free without any guilt, without any, you know, any coercion to participate. It must be that it makes sense for me to be a participant as an employee, and it makes sense for the company that they support me. That's the first one. The second is that obviously we've spoken about this ad nauseum, which is get experts to assist.
Yes.
You know, there are certain things that are better assisted than being done on your own. And third, be clear about what your measurement is from the company side. So if it is about amplification, then it's about amplification. If it's about the type of shares that you get and so on, then it's that. But be clear what it is that you're looking for right at the beginning, and then work towards that metric. And if you're not getting the results that you're looking for, keep tweaking until you get the result that you're looking for. And if you aren't getting the result, then go back to the people that helped you out in the first place to say, listen, this is what we've been trying. This doesn't work. And perhaps they will give you a different perspective.
Those are fantastic tips. I love that. Thank you.
Thanks to you.
Pleasure. Ayanda, before we go away, maybe you can tell us where listeners can follow you, maybe on LinkedIn to see what you guys are up to, what are you up to, and also maybe where they can follow PPS online.
So PPS is on Facebook. It's PPS for Professionals. On Facebook, on Instagram. We are on LinkedIn as well as Twitter. So obviously each of these platforms we use for different things. LinkedIn we use a lot more for more deeper engagement if you want to educate and give a lot of deeper information would go there. But Twitter is more like a broadcast, quick, succinct, what you're trying to say. Okay. So different, the different platforms do different things. So you can follow, if you search for PPS, you are likely to find us quite easily. We also have a YouTube channel, which would have information about the company, some of our adverts, as well as things like interviews with our CEO. So if you want to know more about PPS, we're also there on YouTube. Myself, I am active on Twitter and on LinkedIn. I must be honest, I haven't been that active on LinkedIn this year. Just, with COVID, life has been happening. I call myself an opinionist on Twitter. And in fact, after this training, I realized that perhaps being such an opinionist on Twitter might not be the greatest of ideas. So I try and engage quite positively on that platform, although it is a vicious platform, but
it is very vicious on those streets. Amazing. What's your handle so people can find you if they want
On Twitter it's Ayanda19, and then on LinkedIn it's my name and surname, Ayanda Siboni.
This was such a great chat. I think people are either going to become aware of what employer influencing is and pique some interest and do some investigation into maybe doing it in their brands, or they have already known kind of about it and now know a lot more about it. So thank you so much.
Thank you for inviting me.
It's a huge pleasure. Ayanda, have a fantastic day and hopefully we'll chat soon.
Thank you. You too.
Thanks so much. Bye.
Bye.